¿En qué pensé? So for any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them via the chat. Bente, so I have a question, which is, so like in the daily life, you know, I observe the mind clinging onto this and that, and it's actually quite an unpleasant feeling, right, when the mind is, you know, not tranquil and is, I guess, in a way, agitated. So is this through the practice that we continuously recognize that these create unpleasant feelings that gives the mind that desire to actually no longer be attached to those things and to just let go and not let these things affect us? Is it just through this ongoing repetition of seeing kind of the unpleasant feeling that you know, the defilements bring to us that allows us to then be relieved from them?
Maybe because I mean vipassana practice gives us more realistic kind of a perspective, so that probably does not helping us to delude ourselves. Or say, for example, whenever we become delighted, so that has a fair amount of ignorance included. Say you are seeing a movie and you are enjoying it. Now, in order to enjoy a movie, you have to be fairly deluded. You have to take it as something real, and it is beautiful, and these are real people. They are fighting, they are laughing, they are loving, they are going through some romanticism. So, I mean, these are real. So, this is how we have to take it. Then only we can enjoy. But whenever we see it more properly, whenever we understand, okay, this is just merely a movie, they are merely actors, these things are characters, they are not real characters, this is not a true story, they are simply acting. Now we get into a kind of a dry kind of a situation. I mean, we can't enjoy the movie. So similarly, when we see the reality of different forms, different, say, as you mentioned, the mental states and the defilements, so we can't enjoy it. So probably it can be a little equanimous in that sense. But that is why Buddha time to time mentioned that if you feel that your mind is not balanced now, you are doing a lot of investigations. So these investigations reveal that those kinds of impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-governable nature, and that is, if we are not properly balancing our mind, it can even lead to a little kind of dry, a little kind of depressive type of state. So at that time Buddha mentioned, don't continue in that way, so just associate some other little delightful object for the moment and make your mind a little happy, more joyful. Because the mental balance is quite important. That is where Buddha mentioned about Panidhaya Bhavana and Apanidhaya Bhavana. So Apanidhaya Bhavana is where you don't have any desire. Rather, you are trying to investigate the present phenomena and to understand it properly. So that can be a little dry. But when you feel that, Buddha mentioned, okay, now you can stop it temporarily. Now you can switch to a Panidhaya Bhavana. Now you switch to a Samatha meditation. Say you are reflecting about the qualities of the Buddha. You are reflecting about the loving kindness. So when you do loving kindness meditation, now you feel a little bit of loving kindness. You feel compassion. You feel a little happy, comfortable, and mind is fairly uplifted. So now mind has recovered from that dry attitude. Now again, you can switch back to the Apanidhaya Bhavana, to the four foundations of mindfulness. And now you can restart investigation. Because our mind is like a child. So you can't teach the child immediately. So you have to use certain tactics to entertain him. And you want to teach him mathematics. So you can't simply use typical say numbers, etc. So instead you are using various tools, various say playing toys, etc. If you want to count, and you are using those, using toys, now you are teaching how to count to 10, etc., etc. So these are different techniques, so that the child get interested, because it the mechanism used to teach is quite interesting. But at the same time, he's learning mathematics as well. Otherwise, if you are simply purely teaching mathematics, it may be really dry. So similarly, here in Vipassana also, say whenever you are purely using Vipassana, it could be a little dry, and it can lead to kind of dryness of the mind, bit of unsatisfactoriness of the mind, because what he encounter, what it encounter, what it understand is nothing but the unsatisfactoriness, kind of the impermanent nature, non-governable nature. So it's getting a little bit of dispassion. Now that time to time, if it is going beyond or little coming little depressive, then we need to stop and we need to properly balance it. And even when it comes to the seven enlightenment factors, that is where Buddha mentioned, so you have to be always vigilant, maintain mindfulness, and recognize which direction is more powerful or more excess. If your mind is too much thinking, too much dry, agitated, then Buddha mentioned, don't do the investigation now. Now you got to stop investigation. Instead, now develop samadhi, develop equanimity, develop passaddhi, the tranquility. Now you need to little bit pacify the mind. You need to little bit make it joyful. So on the other hand, if you feel drowsy, if you feel lethargic, and there is no wisdom, now you should not stay in the samadhi. You should not stay in the concentration. Rather, you need to start investigation. You need to examine the things more closely. So likewise, so Buddha mentioned, so time to time when we are dealing with the Vipassana practice, we need to see how these two states, either the mind is agitated or whether it is become lethargic. If it is agitated, you need to stop investigation and put more attention towards samadhi, make your mind more comfortable, tranquil, serene. So that has to be developed. On the other hand, if your mind feels more lethargic, more drowsy, and you don't know where you are, unconscious type of thing, then Buddha mentioned you better stop concentration, you better get up and go to the walking path and do kind of say examination, investigation. So likewise, time to time we have to adjust our practice depending on the situation of the mind.
Yeah, Banji, so if I may, I guess maybe clarify with like a specific example. So let's say I, you know, was going about a walk and then a thought appeared in my mind. And I know that I recognize that it's a craving thought.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately there's a sense of unpleasantness with this craving thought, and that it feels like an agitation in the mind. And then now the mind turned towards just watching the unpleasantness, and as a whole, how does it feel in both the body and the mind? And then it's just kind of just watching this, and this kind of unpleasantness also fades away and other things come into the mind. And so it's just constantly watching these various things, you know, mm-hmm. from feelings and also bodily sensations arising and changing, and recognizing that these, and not attaching to any of these in any particular moment, but recognizing that they are all arising out of specific causes and conditions and mm-hmm. habitual tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings a bit of, I guess, kind of like a peacefulness and acceptance to all these phenomena.
Good. I mean, if you have that peaceful acceptance, and if you can tolerate these things for a time being, be patient with them and you accept, okay, this is the way it is and I have to bear it for the time being, but I am not feeding them, I am not a victim of them. So that is better then. You don't need to change because you are confident of what you are doing. Because now you are properly facing them, no? You are face to face with them. Various defilements are there, you are observing them, various they give you proper understanding. Now we should not shift to samatha meditation. Rather, we need to patiently endure it, patiently go through it, understand how things are going on. I mean, this is the real nature. I mean, more and more you understand them, you are not feeding them, and they start to naturally fade away because they themselves are not strong. They themselves don't have much energy to sustain for a long time. So if we are confidently observing them, mindfully observing them, properly understanding them, so you just need to continue. With time, they become more and more weaker, and ultimately they start to disappear.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
That I'm on the right path.
But sometimes, actually, the point is, these things come more and more sometimes. Because we feel when it is going to have the end, it is become very much like endless, so much defilements. So, but still, we have to bear it and carefully investigate them, allow it to fade away without interfering them, then slowly they may fade away. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite Joseph to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Hello, Bhante.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question just at the end of your talk. You were saying how the consciousness can get checked when it can't base itself on an object. On a mark. And two questions I had, and with that, you also said, I want to confirm something about the effect on the consciousness would also affect other of the khandhas. And so my question was, if the mind does not feel checked because it, say the sunyata, if the mind is comfortable without being based on something, and then saying that then the consciousness is no longer checked and is at ease, what would be the effect on the sanya? On the sankhara, on the other kind of, if I was understanding
correct
what you're saying at the end.
Yes, correct. Actually, that is the very result of the vipassana practice, where you are no more distinctly focusing onto a particular object. You went through that focusing scenario, you focusing attention and understanding their nature, and after having understood the real nature, now mind starts to relinquish them. Mind starts to find its freedom without associating any of these. Now, whenever mind does not associate anything, so that means the consciousness is not established. What we call as, it becomes unestablished consciousness. So, appatitita vinyana. Where the mind, the consciousness is now very much like pervaded. It is not focused onto one thing. You are aware of everything, like a kind of a passive observation. You are not focused onto a very special one thing, but you are aware of everything. You hear sounds, you feel things and you see things, but you are not purposely seeing something, not purposely listening to something, not purposely smelling some odor. You are not purposely selecting a particular taste. You are not volitionally purposely say, going through a particular mental state. So likewise, this volitional activities become less, but you are living. You are being aware. You are being conscious. So when that state is available, when that mind become unestablished, consciousness is unestablished. So there Buddha mentioned the four elements. Those images of the four elements no more entangled in your mind. They are no more troubling in the mind. So the mind is very pure. So basically the mind become more spacious. Now if you consider, as I mentioned today, our minds are occupied with so many things. So our mind is occupied with so many four elements derived things. Say for example, say I have feeling about my body. I have feeling about my sister, my brother, my children, my mother, my father, my country, my vehicle. Now all these are four elements actually. So four elements are the ground level, the fundamental level. On top of that, we have constructed so many things. We have given so many names, and with which our mind is fully occupied. But when the consciousness become unestablished, so these kinds of four element based perceptions can't be in the mind. It can't trouble the mind. So the mind has to be fairly spacious. That is where the emptiness is coming to the picture. So mind is fairly empty from all these different kinds of perceptions. And even they come, you are not getting deluded by them. And so the mind is fairly empty, unestablished, very pure, and not in attention. So this is the way that we can explain it. So when either any of the aggregates, when it is developed to fair extent, so the mind become anisita, unassociated, it becomes non-grasping, anupadaya, and therefore the consciousness become unestablished. Anidassano apatittita. So it does not represent anything. So the awareness is there, pure awareness is there, that's all. Your awareness, your attention is not focused onto a selected thing. And there is no something. So that is interesting area actually we need to discuss. Actually, as we further going on in this sutta, these are the areas that Buddha further investigate how we have to do some sort of a disintegration. We have to dismantle. Rather than accumulate things, we have to relinquish things. Rather than constructing things, we have to deconstruct. Rather than assembling things, we have to disassemble. Rather than occupying things in the mind, we have to very much like disoccupy or to vacate the things so that mind become more spacious, more empty. Hope you got something.
That was great, thank you.
Yeah.
Does that suggest that by being in that unestablished consciousness with spacious perception, would that automatically disassemble
the sankhara?
Would it be a kind of automatic thing that would happen?
Or would
it happen
done? Yes.
Kind of a technique.
Definitely. Actually, that is where the Buddha mentioned visankhara gatam cittam. Now, mind no more constructs things. It's seeing is just seeing. Hearing is just seeing. Smelling, tasting, recognizing, going to various sensations, is just that it is. No more constructions. And mental images may appear in the mind, thoughts might appear in the mind, but no constructions into them. So you simply let them go. So less and less constructions, less and less preparations, less and less mental activities in that sense. Activities in the sense that You are not become kind of a dumb, kind of a zombie type of a person. Rather, you have become fully conscious, but conscious awareness is there. Other than that, no constructions. So mind is not operating, making things, creating things, assembling things, constructing things. So that sort of activities become less and less. That is, yeah, Buddha mentioned the term sabba sankhara samatu. So the constructions become, all the constructions become fairly tranquil. So you do not do much of constructions now. Rather, you would like to tranquilize things. And instead of making intentions, volitional activities, you are minimizing volitional activities. So you allow things to happen. Yeah.
Thank you. Terwan.
Yeah, Terwan Sanmai. Yeah, actually, can you post these three? Actually, feelings are two types in that sense. So those can be bodily feelings as well as the mental feelings. Actually, we may start with the bodily feelings because that is more easier. Then probably we may go through the what you call the mental feelings as well, because it's a kind of a gradual process. Buddha mentioned that you start with bodily feelings. I mean, not really specially mentioned that you have to start with, but it is more easier in the practical terms. It is more easier to start with the bodily feelings and then slowly go to the mental side as well to understand various mental side. So, and again, when Buddha discuss about Vedana Anupassana, he discuss about Amisa Vedana and Niramisa Vedana. Now, Amisa in the sense, the various kinds of feelings more related to the five senses, and the Niramisa is more maybe related to the meditation and maybe related to the other mental activities, that you have Niramisa kind of feelings, unworldly kind of feelings. So there it is more mental. So as you mentioned, so Vedana Anupassana is not merely the bodily feelings. It consists of bodily feelings plus mental feelings as well.
I'm just taking the questions in the order in which they get submitted. So the next question says, what is it that we have to do to sharpen our wisdom to see the form as nothing but form and eliminate all the other stories that we build around form?
Yeah, exactly. So that is what the vipassana is. Yeah, you see things as they truly are. So, I mean, whenever you do kayanupassana, so you are looking at the body in different perspectives. So you, rather than considering it as my body, my beautiful body, my this and that, so now you step back and observe the body. You understand what it is. You are trying to investigate what it is. So this way, in this way, we are giving a better chance to understand its real nature rather than being obsessed by its appearance. Now we step back and have an unbiased observation, non-judgmental type of observation, so that we get a better understanding about the body. So that is where Buddha gave various ways to investigate it. One way is its behavior. It is going through various postures. It is changing different postures, and you can't maintain the same posture for a long time. You feel a little bored or you feel painful, then you have to change the posture. And you may understand, I mean, how vulnerable it is, I mean, how difficult it is to maintain even a single posture. So you have a little bit of dispassion in that sense. And then Buddha mentioned, okay, it is breathing. So it's a breathing is an ongoing process available in the body. And as you understand that, then you feel, okay, without breathing, it can't maintain itself. And breathing also changes. And even with that, you understand its vulnerability. And then assume that you understand its components or anatomical parts. Various bodily parts are available. So Buddha gives the most common ones, 32 anatomical parts. And more you reflect them, then you see, I mean, which part am I going to call belong to me or myself or I am. So none of the parts I can recognize as myself or I am. But once they are assembled in a particular manner, then probably we call it as a male body, maybe a female body. So likewise. So you have another understanding. Then even going deeper, then we are going to the levels of the elements. So more we understand the element characteristics, now we are going to the more fundamental, primordial kind of behavior of the body. There you understand it is not kind of a thing, rather it's a manifestation of a four elements. They are constantly changing. Different element characteristics are constantly available. We don't know which one comes forward and they are changing. They are vulnerable and we don't have any control. So more and more you investigate like that, then you become more and more dispassionate. You don't want to recognize with the body. You compare, rather you understand, okay, this four elements and the outside four elements are nothing but the four elements. There is no any significant value to the internal four elements. You can't say the internal four elements are more superior than the external four elements, but they are merely four elements. So that is where the whole physical world is nothing but four elements. That is where slowly you get kind of a broader understanding. So this insight practice is the key to understand about the proper nature of the body. And even Buddha mentioned further that after the death, what is going to happen to this body? In the Navasivatika, the stages of the corpse, even that Buddha has given to understand the full spectrum of our body in different stages. So that helps us to have a proper understanding about the body.
Thank you, Benedict. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my question is, our last week we spoke about consciousness and the Buddha gave a lot of importance to the consciousness related to the other four aggregates. And today also we spoke about the mental, the volitional formations. So would I be correct if I say that the volitional formations and consciousness is what is really important, because our thoughts are the things that bring about all this, the craving and the loba dosha moha. So would that be right if I said that?
Actually, it depends on the person. So some people, understanding about the form is more important because they have more attachment towards the form. So more they investigate about the form, so they are, that strong attachment become less and less. But some people are more into feeling tone, and they want to investigate further on the feelings. And some people are trapped in various perceptions. So they want to investigate about the perceptions so that they can avoid getting trapped in various perceptions. And some are more into the creativity and constructions and thinking, more, too much obsessive thinking. So they have to understand about the formations and maybe the consciousness. So it depends on the different personality characteristics or character traits. So we can't generalize this telling that it is the formations everybody has to do or something like that. So different people have different characteristics, different personality traits. So therefore, we have to give different recipes to different people.
So when we talk of the form, now we look at ourselves in the mirror and or whatever, whoever looks at themselves in the mirror and they say, you know, yes, yes, I've got beautiful hair or teeth or looking beautiful or my dress is beautiful or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But those are, though we are looking at the form, that's correct, and we are looking at it, but it's really the thoughts, that volitional formations and consciousness that is really coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
But we are looking at the form.
Yes,
isn't that
yes.
Right?
True, true. The thing is, I mean, all these five aggregates are working together. So,
yeah.
I mean, if we consider the form part only, so actually the form part there is the reflection coming from the mirror, that the light and the all the material parts available in the mirror, and then whatever the material parts available in our eyes, so that is only the physical part. But as you mentioned, all the other things, whatever the feelings that we have and different perception that I am beautiful, I am now old. Now, these are different perceptions. And on top of that, we do a lot of constructions, thinking. So all these comes under the mental part. True, I mean, fairly heavy part is there in the mental side. At the same time, I mean, these five aggregates are very much interrelated, working together, and all five are present, but time to time one of them or a couple of them come forward and they become more stronger than the others.
Yes, but still now even if you have a nice feeling or an unpleasant feeling, that is also interpreted by the mind, you know, the mind.
Yes, yes,
is,
yes.
I believe it is formed of the formations of the consciousness.
Correct. You are correct.
Would that be right if I said
yes? Yes.
So, though we are breaking up, though of course in the first time we look at this body and we go into the four elements and all that, but it is the mind that is controlling all this.
Yeah, we can say so, because mind is the one interpreting and constructing and all sorts of things. So that is where...
Coming to the conclusion, sorry? Conclusion that this is a good thing or this is a bad thing, or I'm proliferating,
yeah.
Or all those things.
Yeah.
It is all controlled by this mind, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah. I accept because, I mean, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, they are simply the apparatus. And the majority is done by the mind, the whole processing part, including so much of preconceived ideas and all sort of manipulations, everything's done by the mind, definitely.
Because the Buddha says in that sentence, I am now being devoured by form. It is true, but if you go into the, contemplate on it more and more, it is the mind that is being devouring.
Exactly.
The form.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Because now here, when I am calling I being devoured by form, so what part is I? So I part is basically the mind.
Yes.
So mind being and occupied by the form in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And even you gave the example of anger, and you said, you know, this then the mind is starting now, you know, this person was in the past did this and in the present will do this, and then the mind is starting to weave all these stories, and then there is so much of more and more anger. So it started with the feeling. Started with the feeling, but the mind took over.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we discussed in the Madhupindika Sutta, where this whole construction happened, or this whole process happened in cause and effect relationship. Say, actually, when whatever the sensory object come in line with the sense object, sense faculty, then the sense consciousness arises. Say, whenever it encounters the form, then the eye consciousness. And when these three happen again and again, this whole impingement happen again and again, then the feeling arises. So yeah. when we feel, we want to recognize it. When we are recognizing, okay, I want to think about it. Now I am thinking.
Yeah.
Now I am putting my hand. Now I am interfering. Now I am thinking, ultimately overthinking, and ultimately going to the mental proliferation. So this is how Buddha explained kind of a more say subtle manner. So the mental proliferation is not the one immediately happen, rather it's before that there are fair amount of thinking, our participation, our intentional thinking, and even before that there is kind of a feeling and recognition, and even before that kind of a thing happen because of the cause and effect relationship.
So really, to prevent all of that, we have to really jump on the thoughts that come with whatever.
Yes.
We can jump on that and identify that, then we can stop all of that.
Yes.
And what the Buddha also said, are we devoured by form? We can stop that also.
Sure, definitely. That is where we need to minimize as much as possible about the mental proliferation. Once we minimize, avoid mental proliferation, and now we can recognize whether I am thinking something useful, something beneficial, or is it something harmful. Then we can do some adjustments to our thinking. I mean, it may not be the mental proliferation, it may not be the mental proliferation, but what I am thinking. So that thinking also can be adjusted if possible, if we can adjust.
Yes.
So what it is necessary to think, only I am thinking. When it is not necessary, I am keeping the mind silent. So I am enjoying some sort of an inner silence, completely free from inner chatter. So that is more constructive, that is more beneficial to ourselves, and it is mentally beneficial, and our bodily, I mean healthily, it is beneficial. And that is the path actually. So that is where Buddha mentioned, I mean, whenever you are alone, try to be mindful, try to be silent. If you want to talk, then talk something which is beneficial. Similarly, whenever you are thinking, check whether you are thinking something beneficial. If not, keep the mind silent.
But that's the only way that we can come to that level, no? That you said that we can come to this empty, unestablished, pure spacious consciousness. That is ultimately that is our goal, but we can only get to that by contemplating. Even if we have a lot of mind to run around all over the place, and we could control it at that time, we could sit down and then contemplate even about what happened before.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only way that we can get better in this process, isn't it, Marte?
Yeah. I mean, that is where Buddha telling in various suttas, say for example in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so instead of going to the mental proliferation, so you are invited to come back again and again to that neutral, unconstructed, unattached kind of mentality. So more and more, so your mental state become more stable and unagitated, calm, tranquil. So that is the state that Buddha asked us to associate more and more.
Yeah, that is the goal.
That is the goal. Yes.
But as the worldly sense, we get caught up and we get all.
Yes.
Happening to us, and we are devoured by all these things.
Yeah.
But if we understand that it's the thoughts that are the mind, that the thoughts and the consciousness, that is really
Yes. I mean, that is where so we are very much like dismantling our thoughts. We understand, we investigate our thoughts, what we are thinking, why we are thinking, how we are participating, how we are unnecessarily putting our hand, how we are unnecessarily interfering. So more and more, all our stupid activities that we do, participation we do, unnecessary participation we do. So those things we are understanding. So more and more we understand, so we become calm, not participating, allow thoughts to happen and they go. I am not bothered by them. They are not mine. They are not myself. They are merely thoughts. So likewise, one become more and more dispassionate towards thoughts. And one can enjoy this inner silence, give more value to that inner silence, inner understanding, than too much thinking.
Yes, but I always go to the four elements.
That's up to you. No problem.
Four elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because that is the form and everything outside of, as you said earlier in your talk, that everything is the four elements, my family and the world.
Yes, yes.
Everything is the four elements. So I start the four elements. All things.
Can.
But then you break it down to very simple things. There is no substance, it's colon. Isn't that right, Bhakti?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, actually, it depends on the people, the practitioner. Mm-hmm. Not everyone needs to start with, the four elements. I mean, if they are more familiar with four elements, then more comfortable with that, they can start with that. If they are more comfortable with feelings, they can start with that. So, likewise, different people have different approaches. So, doesn't matter. So, whatever it is convenient, we can start with. But as you said...
But at the end of the, at the end of the day,
yeah.
They are all colorless and there is no substance, so you can start with anything, but at the end of the day, there
yes.
is nothing.
Yes, then, yes, yes.
That's what we have to understand.
Yes.
In our thoughts.
Yes, yes. True. Correct.
Thank you, Bhakti.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhakti. The next question from the chat is.
Never mind.
Let's get to
the next
great
hand, Panti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Jennifer.
Bhante,
my name is Sam.
Yes.
I was wondering whether there's a clear definitional difference between Sankara and Papaccha. I'm thinking that they both arise from the Vitakka. So is Papaccha an excessive degree of sankhara or not?
Yeah, we can say so. Actually, at the papancha level, the person who is subjected to become very much beyond his control. Now, papancha is the one controlling him. So, the person undergoing it has become kind of a slave to that. So, he has loosened his controllability. That is the papancha level. But at the sankhara level, he may actively still participating and he actively thinking, purposely thinking. He is delighted in thinking. So that sort of thing is there. His participation is there. But at the papancha level, so he become a victim of that whole process.
You lost control.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a gray area between the two in some ways.
Right? Yeah, so how, when you are going to switch or going under the papancha, under the kind of becoming a slave to the thinking is very vague in that sense. Yes.
Yeah.
So we start thinking, we actively participate in that thinking, and more the mind getting the momentum, develop the momentum, ultimately we lose our control.
Right. So, the other question I have, Bhante, is that in Madhupindika Sutta, it clearly says, but you don't have to go through Sankhara to get to Papancha, right? You can get direct to Papancha as well, correct?
No, the thing is, now, even at the vitakka level, the constructions are there. Sankharas are there.
So sankharas are there, okay.
Yes. Because, thinking in the sense, so thinking itself is sankhara.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
So, the next question, Bhante, is, I have an allergic cough. How can I analytically comprehend this distasteful stage? How can I overcome this irritable and at times depressing experience?
Can you repeat the question, Jennifer?
Sure, Bhante. Yes, it's a question from the chat. It says, I have an allergic cough. How can I analytically comprehend this distasteful stage?
I see.
And how can I overcome this irritable and at times depressing experience?
Uh-huh. So basically, I mean, if it is a sign of a bodily disease, I mean, first of all, I mean, you better consult a doctor. And from the mind side, actually, you can recognize the very early stages of the development of this process. More and more you become mindful. Say, for example, if you are more mindful, if your mindfulness is sharp, then the very early signs of this process you can understand. So there could be a kind of a solution you can recognize, because ultimately when you become fairly subjected to this process, then you are helpless. I mean, it is grown to some extent. But more you are mindful, you can recognize the early signs, early stages of this disease. And on the other hand, more and more you are mindful, you can avoid that depressing part. So the depressing part is something that you are adding, because you think, why it is happening to me again? I mean, I can't do it again. Why I am going through it again? So much of eye making, so much of conditioning process going on, and you recognize yourself as a poor victim of this process. Now, so much of personifying is there. A personal involvement is there. You are excessively participating in the whole process. So the physical discomfort is one thing, and you are eye making, you are making it your cough, your irritation, your allergic reaction. So that is another thing. If you can keep the bodily pain as bodily pain without constructing based upon that, so that help you to minimize. So mind made suffering, so mind made depression. So the bodily pain, of course, is there, that you have to take some medicine. But how about minimizing the mind-made suffering? So that is where the mindfulness and the Buddha's teaching is quite helpful, so that we can have a kind of a distant observation of the bodily pain, discomfort, whatever disease, and maintain kind of an uninvolved observation. So we are not going to claim, this is my pain, this is my thing, this and that. Rather, so I am accepting, okay, now the body is going through some suffering, this is kind of painful, this is the situation of the body. So I am having a kind of a radical acceptance of the situation. I am not trying to make something from it. I am not trying to claim it as mine. I am not trying to add to it. I am not putting myself as a poor person onto it. That actually helps to minimize the mental part, mental suffering.
Thank you.
Okay, that's okay, all, right?
Looks like there's two more questions.
Ah, really? I see.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a very engaged participant.
Good.
So the next one is actually a follow-up from a previous question and your response, Sunday. So it asks, dear Bhante, to continue on the Vedana Nupassana earlier, that it also includes mental feelings. What is Chitana Nupassana? This also reflects on mental feelings. What is the difference?
Uh-huh. Correct. Actually, in the Chitta Nupassana, you go more into the details. So whenever you have some lustful thoughts, when you have, say, irritation, when you have hatred, you have delusion, you have involvement, entanglement, or you, when the mind is concentrated, when the mind is blissful. So different states of mind is further understood in the Chittanupassana. But in the Vedananupassana, you are simply taking the feeling component only, not going into detail. Say, suppose there you are going through some angry thought. But you are not considering the anger, but you are feeling the burning part, the suffering part, the uncomfortable feeling you have. So only the feeling part is considered at the Vedananupassana. But on the other hand, in the Chittanupassana, you are going into more detail kind of distinctly recognizing these subtle mental states, whether it is lustful, whether it is hateful, whether it is, say, involved, entangled, or blissful, concentrated, or more distracted, or more contracted. So likewise, mind is carefully investigated at the Chittana Pasana level.
Thank you, Bente. And I'm asking someone to clarify their question. While we wait, Bente, for the Saturday morning Dhamma discourse, who is it that manages that class, Bente? I'd like to connect the participant with that person for more information.
You mean the Shalika? She's the one handling the Saturday, you mean my program, Saturday, every last Saturday program?
Yes, Bente.
Clarity of mind.
Yes, that's right. What is her last name?
Shalika de Silva.
Okay.
I think she's participating even now. So, probably you may have the her email address.
Yeah. I will reach out to her. I think I do have her email
address. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
So this last question that I got that I've received, Bente, I'm not sure. I don't understand it, but perhaps you do. I'm also going to send it to you directly. One moment. And then I'll read this one out loud. So the question asks, if one can try eliminate all your sangha, is that we can call as noble achievement, Bante?
Okay, actually the Sangha here is not the Sangha that we typically call Buddha Dhamma Sangha, that this Sangha is not something. So Sangha here, I think as far as I can remember, some sort of engagement, some sort of entanglement, kind of defilement available in the mind. So the term Sangha has different meanings. So I need to check actually certain verses are there, sangati gato or something like that. So let me find it out and give you the exact answer. I can't exactly remember. As far as I can remember, sangha is a Pali term for defilements, but I need to check that.
Okay, and the person that asked the question, Ananda, has raised his hand. So, Ananda, I don't know if you have a follow-up to what Bante just mentioned.
I am extremely sorry, Bante, and everybody. The word I try to type is Sangha is wrong. It is coming from the keyboard. Actually, what I mean was Sanya.
Sanya,
Sanya,
yeah.
Because I am really fond of this Ananda Sanya, the sutra, which you have explained to me some time back, Bante.
Right.
I am extremely sorry, I couldn't find, because I know how to write in Sinhala, but
right.
English. Sorry.
Fine. Okay, this Sanya, actually, when we are discussing the perception aggregate, we'll see, because now each and every aggregate, whenever we are working on it, when we do the insight practice, so in certain suttas, Buddha explained what would be the ultimate result. Say, for example, when it comes to the form aggregate, so even the perceptions of the forms, say, patavi sanya, papo sanya, heat, this tejo sanya, all sorts of the element related sanya can't be in the mind. So more you develop, so those kind of sanyas have to be abandoned in the mind. And when it comes to perceptions, so one may have to have a kind of a dispassion towards the perception. So you are no more giving value to the perceptions. You recognize perception as perception. They are merely a mirage. They are not real. So they are mind-made, or they are mental constructs, or they are available in the mind. They are not really available in the outside. Now, say for example, the simile that Buddha given for sanya is the mirage. Now, whenever we see a mirage, we immediately get the wrong perception of water. But immediately, if we have some wisdom, then we have to correct ourselves, telling, okay, this is not water. This is a mirage. So, similarly, whenever a sign appears in the mind, we immediately attribute it to a person. Okay, this is my son. This is my brother. This is my mother. But at that time, rather than attributing like that, how about instructing the mind, advising the mind, don't get entangled. This is an image. This is a sign. So that is where we have to be careful. We have to do the practice. So more and more we do that. So these different mental images, sanya available in the mind, become less and less, more weaker and weaker. And ultimately, even the perceptions we have, okay, I like this person, I don't like this person, he's a good person, he's a bad person. So likewise, I have holding so much of perception related to the people, so much perceptions about various other things. And I think these perceptions are correct, these perceptions are permanent, they are the correct perceptions. My perception is correct, your perception is wrong. So I have these kinds of various attitudes inbuilt in myself. If I can understand even these levels, then further I can cleanse my mind, clear my mind, and then I can understand, okay, these perceptions are also changing. People can change, I can change, the weather can change, the other, maybe politicians can change, whatever it is, everything can change. So I don't need to strongly hold to a particular perception. So likewise, the sanya has a huge variation, kind of a large variation. You may start with little signs, marks, etc., and storing them as different, say, sanya perceptions. And even later, you have different preconceived ideas, perceptions, and that also that we have to work on.
Thank you, Bhante, but you know, from the day we born to this world, you know, we are trying to grasp the sannyas rather than avoid them.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Even the teaching, you know, for example, I'm not talking anything against, I'm really trying to avoid those sannyas and try to be, you know, very calm and, you know, without anything. I am practicing it. I think everybody is trying to do that. But I would like to raise a question. So, example, when you are doing Attika Sanya, so again, you are trying to develop a sense of type of Sanya. Is that
yes.
Correct?
Correct, correct. So, that is where, I mean, even if you consider what you call the Girimananda Sutta. So, Buddha talks about 9 types of sanya, which is more helpful, beneficial. Now, in a way, we are cultivating first certain necessary beneficial type of sanya instead of harmful, unnecessary type of sanya. So, we are trying to eliminate unnecessary, harmful sanya. Instead of, we are trying to develop beneficial, correct, non-harmful type of sanya. And later, you may be able to overcome everything. So, it is not necessary even to maintain, hold strongly to any sanya, but you are using it like a medicine to eliminate the wrong sanya.
You mean facilitating?
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes. That's right.
Thank you very much. I really learned a lot.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. I think, Jennifer, we have spent a fair amount of time today.
Yes, Sanjay.
Yeah, I think some of you may be feeling quite sleepy now. So then we'll wind up the session today. So thank you very much for all of your active participation. So today we have spent around 2 hours discussing Buddha's teaching and discussing the Dhamma. So with that, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past devil relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. එතාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්‍ය සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු